Hi, my name's Dylan Benyon, and you're listening to another episode of the Cognition & Co podcast, Psychology in South Africa. Today's episode is going to take a slightly different route from the previous episodes, as we don't have a guest schedule for today's show. I've been reaching out to psychology students and professionals from around the country, trying to determine what it is that you, the listener, want to hear in these episodes. One of the most resounding answers has been the topic of research and how to get started on your research journey. So let's do exactly that and get started. Before I do so though, quick disclaimer. I'm not a research psychologist, and I'm also not yet a published author. This is actually something that will hopefully be changing in the near future, as I've recently written and submitted a paper to be peer-reviewed by a journal here in South Africa. I also have experience having been a member of a research and ethics board at a university where I lectured in 2019. I got to work very closely with a number of BSIC fourth year students on their research, and if any of them are listening, I know I was pretty strict, but I'm sure that you can say now that it helped your writing. Hey? So a lot of the information that I'll be giving you all today in this episode will be from my perspective about my experiences in collaboration with the information that I found in various textbooks on the subject, particularly one called Doing Social Research by Wagner, Kawulich, and Garner. I've been doing a lot of research on the topic of research, basically meta-research, and these are some of the things that I've found. The first point of call would be, why even do research? Why is it important? Well, over the last 4 or 5 years during your undergrad and honors, if you're listening to it at that level, or even beforehand, you've learned a lot of facts and theories about psychology, right? Well, I would hope so. Well, in order to have learned these things, we obviously need an overarching framework in order to make sense of these things. That framework is science. Psychology is a science, a social science, but a science. And what that means is that the information included in these theories is empirical, or based on facts and research. Now, during your undergrad, you would have learned a lot of things, right? A love for psychology would hopefully be one of them, and that's probably why you're listening to this podcast. Well, you gain a lot of knowledge over that time, but as part of a student in a scientific field, it's important that you give back to the community by further defining a topic and contributing towards an existing body of knowledge on that topic. So surely during your time as a student, you found a topic that interested you so much that you wanted to know more on that subject. Perhaps also your life experience has given you a unique perspective in which to look at that subject, and maybe you have something that you want to say over and above what that theory has already outlined. Well, now is your chance to give back and contribute towards this field that you love so much, and that's done through research. This is also just a little nod to the critical thinking skills that you need to develop over your time as an undergrad or honors student. You need to start thinking about these topics, not just from the perspective of a student, but also from the perspective of an academic. Taking a topic a little bit further and discussing things like, is this true for all populations or communities? Or something like, will this always stay true? Or will this theory always stay the same way, regardless of technological advancements, for example? So let's jump right in. How do I start? Well, that's a great question, but a better one would actually be, where do I start? Psychology is such a crazy, crazy broad topic. For example, social psychology itself is basically just the psychology of every single interaction that you'll have with another person, right? And evolutionary psychology inherently joins together all the subcategories of psychology. So these are super, super broad. On top of that, like, I'm also excluding perspectives and paradigms, as well as the various psychological routes that you could take that would further kind of expand the lens in which we view psychology. So the where and how to start question is actually answered pretty simply just by saying that you just have to start. Okay, so maybe you have a topic already. Excellent. Most of us don't really have that. Starting your research can be as simple as opening up a Word document and typing research at the top of the page. That's literally actually what I did for this podcast. It's helpful that the topic was actually research, so the title was technically correct, but you don't really need to do anything fancy or complicated in order to start your research. You just have to start it. And from there, it'll grow and develop over time. Okay, so that's my tip to starting research. Okay, simple yet effective. That being said, this textbook that I'm looking at, Doing Social Research, it has a number of actual steps to follow. So let's have a look at them. Before we do that, though, I just wanted to say that I'm only really going to cover getting started in your research. There's other steps like methodology, data analysis, discussion. And I kind of believe that that is a subject for another podcast, perhaps. I personally love statistics, but it's something that's quite difficult to explain over this format. So while I'd be happy to discuss things like students' t-tests and chi-squared analysis, I think we'll leave that for another day. So basically, I'm just going to do an introduction of what you can do to kind of get started and what some of the challenges are to doing that. All right. So the steps we're going to be covering are the following: statement of the problem, development of research questions, relevant literature review, and choice of theoretical approach. And even in that last one, choice of theoretical approach, is not something I'm really going to go into in too much depth, because this is something for you to discuss with your supervisor. And it's also quite dependent on the research that you're doing. All right. One more thing on the topic before I jump right into the steps is that you need to stay flexible during your research. And I say that before we get into all of this, because these steps can often change up. Your topics and questions are going to take some refining throughout the process, and that's exactly what this is. It's a process. It's not linear. It's going to fluctuate as you define and operationalize your topics and your questions. Okay, so the steps. Step one, statement of the problem. What is your area of interest? If you whispered psychology to yourself while listening to this now, I'm going to lose it. A very famous individual once said, "The more I learn, the more I realize how much I don't know." Any ideas of who said that? It was our mate, Albert Einstein. The same principle can be applied to this step. You think you know a lot about a topic or area of interest until you actually start doing the research on that topic. All of a sudden, you find like 200 recent papers, all of which are super focused and well-defined on the particular topic that you wanted to research, and all of them are like 10,000 words long. You basically find yourself staring up at this massive mountain of research, and you are trying to undertake a journey that's going to get you to the top where you can put your flag up there and say, "I've contributed something." It's round about the time when you start doing real research in honors that you start to kind of realize how generalized your undergrad degree really was. There is so much information out there that specifically details these tiny areas of psychology that you've basically never heard of. You know the theories and the paradigms and the theoretical approaches to all of this research that's out there, but what you might not know is how individuals and researchers over time have pushed the boundaries further and further out, constantly expanding psychology and everything that it's about. It's in coming to realize how much information is actually out there in the whole field of psychology that you start to actually understand how purely academic your undergrad and honors are. You haven't even started with the practical aspects and the individual nature of developments from that practical perspective yet. And just a heads up for any undergraduate students that are listening to this, it's for this reason that you need to complete a practical coursework master's program in order to register the HPCSA. So, statement of the problem. From my perspective and my experience, I find that it's even at this very, very first step that students go too big. Like I mentioned before, your statement of the problem cannot actually be psychology or even something narrowed down to counseling psychology. That's still way too broad. Think about the theories that have already been documented and described. Statistically, you're probably not going to reinvent the wheel and discover an entire new subdiscipline of psychology, right? Well, I'm hoping that I'll do that. We'll just wait until my PhD topic drops. But anyway, so even at this step, we already want to be a little bit more specific. We already want to like narrow down our concepts and look at smaller sections of psychology. Now, if you can pull a research topic out of fresh air and you are able to define a whole new area of psychology, that's incredible. Please call me so that we can collaborate and write together. But that's not really how it works for everybody. And we need to start somewhere that's going to give us a foundation to grow from. So consider your areas of interest that you have already. Is there anything that you've read in a psychology textbook or online or something you've noticed or even just a gut feeling that you have about a certain topic or theory that you believe you want to explore a little bit further? A good way to do this is to look at other authors' research. So I'm going to quickly jump to the end a little bit here and try to give you some perspective before I give you the next tip. Think about what happens when you've completely finished all of your writing, you've done your massive dissertation, and along the way you identified a couple of areas where there were very little information. Maybe as you were reviewing literature on antisocial personality disorder, you struggled to find some information on something like conduct disorder in gang populations in the area that you're trying to conduct your research. So would you keep quiet about this, or do you leave it out of your research that you struggled for this? No, you address it. You've actually just identified a gap in the existing body of knowledge, and this is almost as important as your research itself. So again, a bit of critical thinking comes into this. Being able to critically analyze research for gaps is an incredible tool, and one that you'll also have to develop over time. Okay, so back to the tip. Look at other authors' research. Read as much as you can on the topic, and often you'll find that the researchers have actually called for more research to be done in specific areas. They've basically done the work for you. This happened to me recently in doing my own research. There was an area that I just struggled to find any research on the topic. And even though I was writing on the topic, I called for more researchers to actually climb in and try and push that part of the psychological field. So hopefully that'll happen. We'll see. So perhaps you've been sitting on this beautifully orchestrated idea inside your mind about what you want to do your research on. And when it actually comes to researching, you find that somebody's already answered the question or done the research that you wanted to do. Now, this isn't the end of the world. You might have a bit of an answer to the hypothesis that you were kind of thinking of, but what they've actually done as well is they've given you a platform in which to grow further from. In doing so, they might have also identified potential gaps in the research, and you can now work to fill those gaps and expand on the topic from that perspective. Basically, what I'm trying to say is work smart, not hard. So the whole thing about step one really is breaking down the areas of interest that you have. So if earlier you did whisper psychology, let's start there. All right, so you have an interest in psychology. Let's step that down a notch and, you might be interested in abnormal psychology or psychopathology. Now, what area of psychopathology are you interested in? Maybe it's personality disorders. Which one do you want to focus on in particular? Which one has piqued your interest the most? Maybe it's borderline personality disorder. Well, let's take that a step further and look at borderline personality disorder in South Africa. Let's narrow that down and say that we want to look at testing measures assessing borderline personality in South Africa. And finally, let's say that we want to look for the appropriate measures in assessing females with borderline personality disorder in offender populations within South Africa. So can you see how we started off with a really, really broad area of interest being psychology and worked it all the way down until we had a pretty well-defined research question. I'm not sure if that's something that's actually been researched before, but it's something that popped up in my mind. So yeah, in order to get to the step though, in order to work your way down like that, it really helps to just start. Even if it does mean, like I said earlier, write research at the top of your paper and then psychology and then just add areas of interest underneath that, writing it down is so important. It gives you a physical manifestation of your idea from which to grow. Also, something I can't stress enough is that while you start to do the research behind these things and you start to look at papers and, try and find stuff online, whether it is an academic journal or a website or a textbook, write those references down. The last thing that you want to do is formulate this beautiful idea inside your mind and then not actually be able to trace it back to empirical research to write on at a later stage. So make sure you write everything down. It also really helps with the next sort of phase of this first step, which is finding somebody to help you along the way. One of the things that you can do in order to kind of safeguard yourself from spending too much time on a topic that might have already been researched is find somebody that can give you some feedback that also has some expertise in the field. In order to do this, you're going to need to find a supervisor. Now, if you're at a university and you're doing a master's, you will be allocated a supervisor. Or at some universities, if you're doing a dissertation, you'll have to maybe try and find yourself a supervisor that's willing to work with you on your topic. This person can be a lecturer or, like I said, an assigned supervisor or even like a research psychologist that is perhaps maybe working outside of an academic institution. And the reason you want to have a supervisor is that they have expertise in the field, but they're going to help you orientate yourself within the research as well as give you some direction. They're going to help you expand your mind and also challenge you to look deeper into the topic that you're trying to do research in. If I think back to my research, the entire premise of my research was based on this theoretical framework that was identified by my supervisor. I already had all of the information. I just didn't know how to structure it in a way that could have produced an article as to what I got at the end of it. I know I'm being a little bit secretive about my research, but at some point I will do a podcast on my findings if I'm lucky enough to have it published. So we'll talk about that in a later show. But just a note on supervisors. A lot of times, supervisors can be seen by students as a hindrance to the whole process. Like, oh, I have to do my research according to the way that my supervisor wants it done. That's not necessarily true. They only want the best for your research. They're potentially putting their name onto a paper because they will have to put their name onto your paper. They will have to put their name onto a good piece of academic writing that they're hoping to get published. It's a collaborative effort from both ends, basically. Your research needs to be of a certain quality, especially if you are from a university or still studying and you're hoping to publish. Now, if you are going to try and publish, you're going to have to send it to a journal. And it's in sending it to a journal that it's going to be peer-reviewed, where they're going to scrutinize every aspect of it. So your supervisor wants it to get through that as smoothly as possible. And that's why there'll be times where they are hard on you and they will challenge you. But don't think that you don't have a voice in the say of the paper. It's technically your paper that you're working on. So if there's something that is not sitting well with you, if it's like a complete change of topic, then voice your opinion and make sure that your supervisor understands where you're coming from. And from there, you can work and grow together. Many times supervisors know what the research climate is like out there, and they know where research needs to be focused. So even though you're focused on area X, they understand that in area Y, it's more likely that your paper will get published. And those X and Ys are pretty close together. So if it does mean slightly changing the course of your research, that could actually end up better for you. And just because it's not in an area that you originally were interested in, like I said, we have to remain flexible during this process because things are always going to change. Linking this back to my research, I started with an idea of where I wanted everything to go. However, the more we looked at the research and the data, we found that there was this whole new topic that had kind of been created within the framework that we were using. And all of a sudden, we had some new knowledge to contribute towards the existing body of knowledge. So we're very, very happy with that. So next up, we want to look at how to formulate a research question and basically from there decide how you're going to continue forward with your research. It's at this point where I see a lot of students going really, really big, maybe with 5 or 6 different research questions per study. And the problem here is that a lot of these ideas and topics and questions actually overlap a bit, and they end up being quite poorly constructed and not answering the question you're trying to answer. So What exactly is a research question? Well, to answer that, it's basically a research question is a well-constructed question that your research attempts to answer. A research question is usually like 1 or 2 sentences that are focused, specific, and relevant to the topic that you're planning to research. This is such a crucial step. It's basically, it acts as like a springboard that starts your research, but will also continue to drive your research throughout while keeping it focused. While the definition of a research question might have helped a little bit, I think it's more important to give you guys some examples of what these look like. In particular, what a good one looks like and what a bad one looks like. So I found some examples that I'll read to you now. I'll give you the bad one first and then discuss the issues with it, and then I'll reframe it in terms of what makes up a good research question. So have a listen to this first one. What effect does social media have on people's minds? Now, the issue here is that it's not specific enough. What is social media? what social media are you talking about in particular? Just Facebook, you know? From there, what determines people's minds? What part of their minds? Are you looking at cognitive ability? Are you looking at learning ability? Are you talking perhaps about the physical structure of the mind that could be changed? So this one is just not specific enough. So let's reframe it like this. What does daily use of Instagram have on the attention span of children between the ages of 13 and 16? Can you see immediately there we've defined what social media we want to look at? We've defined how often these people or children are using social media. We've decided on looking at their attention span specifically. And then we've gone on to describe the age group in which we hope to work with. Okay, so can you see already a much, much better research question, one that is accurately defined so we know exactly what we're looking at. All right, let's look at another one. Why do fathers perceive their gender role as they do? So this one is already problematic in the fact that we are starting with the question why, because it allows for too many possible answers to that question. There could be 100 reasons as to why fathers perceive their role as such, all right? So the question again is just not focused at all, really. Let's reframe it this way. What impact does gender have on a South African father's perceived role within the family context when working 8 hours plus a day? Can you see this one again is better defined, it's more focused, and we actually know the parameters and the variables that we'll be working with. All right, let's take a look at a third one. How can sexual health services and LGBTQI plus support services in South Africa be improved? Now, this question is not focused enough and actually tries to address two problems at once. Basically, this is doubling the amount of research that you need to do. But the two problems here are first, the quality of sexual services and the quality of LGBTQI plus support services. While these two problems are related, it's not clear exactly how the research will bring this together. So let's look at the reframed research question. How can sexual health clinics in South Africa develop their services and communications to be more LGBTQI plus inclusive? You can tell immediately that that's a better research question, and it also mitigates the issue of doing basically two problems at once by specifically stating where the research needs to be focused. So hopefully that gives you an idea as to what these research questions should basically sound like. Now, your research question can also be a hypothesis. Now, a hypothesis is basically a research question that has been translated to have a positive statement regarding the topic the researcher is trying to study. So the researcher then aims to generate an answer that will either prove or disprove their hypothesis, giving you the ability to either accept or reject your hypothesis and giving you an empirical answer to your hypothesis. I think it's important at this point to acknowledge the fact that research almost always contributes towards the understanding of a topic, even if it doesn't exactly go the way that you want it to go. Say, for example, that you set out to prove hypothesis X, but in the process you actually disproved it. You've actually still found something new. Just because you disproved X doesn't mean that you haven't proved Y. So let's look at an example. Okay, take the following research question. Does playing computer games for longer than 10 hours a day affect one's sleep duration? So as a scientist, you believe that that might in fact happen, you know, that might be exactly what happens. Okay, so you set that as your hypothesis. You do all the research and you set up an experiment, and at the end of it, you get a result stating that your hypothesis was wrong. And while this might be not exactly what you were planning to find, it still doesn't mean that you've wasted your time. So in many cases, you would actually have set up a null hypothesis, which is basically your hypothesis, but playing devil's advocate. It's the reverse of it. So while you would have rejected your main hypothesis, you would have had to have accepted your null hypothesis. And therefore, you've proved that by playing computer games for more than 10 hours a day, it actually doesn't affect somebody's sleep pattern. So that in itself is research, and that in itself has contributed towards the existing body of knowledge. I think one of the important things to note in this case, and this example exactly, is that you've been able to create an experiment that tested your hypothesis. Yeah. So it means that your hypothesis is in fact testable, which is a massive characteristic of a good hypothesis. What this means is that you're able to observe and measure all the variables within that experiment. It also means that it was falsifiable. This is another important characteristic of a good hypothesis. So this means that in observing and measuring the variables, you are able to confirm or disprove the hypothesis. In speaking on the idea of variables within research, one of the issues researchers and scientists have that if your variables cannot be measured and the hypothesis is not falsifiable, then the research itself is deemed inappropriate for the scientific method. So making sure that your research measures what it's supposed to measure is called construct validity. A challenge to construct validity is often found when we try and operationalize our variables. And this can be quite difficult in psychology at times. For example, if you are a scientist working in a lab and you need to measure out 187 millimeters of water, how do you do that? Well, it's easy enough. You grab yourself a test tube and a pipette and you measure out 187 milliliters of water. However, in psychology, it becomes a little bit more difficult with the social aspects of it. How do you determine aggression? There are a number of constructs within psychology that are difficult to operationalize, and I chose aggression because I found a paper that did this in a very, very unique way. Researchers set out to determine if there was a differing level of aggression in individuals that played a fighting video game as a male character or as a female character. In order to measure this level of aggression, they decided to use hot sauce in a unique way. So test subjects were paired up with a partner and they were told that their partner hated hot sauce. What they had to do then was play this video game and they were assigned randomly either a male or female avatar. And then afterwards they were told, you need to put hot sauce onto a plate of food that your partner will eat. That partner has to eat everything that's on there. And the amount of hot sauce that they put onto the food that they were going to be given to their partner was therefore directly correlated with their level of aggression. So the results actually showed that those that played with a male avatar ended up putting significantly more hot sauce onto the food for the partner than they did if they were playing with a female avatar. So an interesting way to operationalize variables. So now that we've accurately defined our research question, it's important that we start to look at what other researchers have said on the topic that we're trying to research. We do this by conducting a literature review. Now, a literature review is basically a systematic overview of published and unpublished research on a particular topic. Keep in mind that there is a difference between a literature review and writing a literature review, and the one I'm going to talk to you about today is the former. There are a number of sources where you can get step-by-step guides as to how to write your literature review, but for now, I kind of just want to ease you into it and get your mind around the fact that at some point you are going to have to do this. There really is a ton of literature on the topic, and the textbook that I'm using at the moment is an excellent guide for anybody that wants to do social research, which is why they call it doing social research. But basically what I wanted to say is don't be afraid of this part. The literature review is actually one of my favorite parts of writing. It's really an amazing opportunity to really become part of the field that you're hoping to gain a deeper understanding of and actually get an understanding of what's going on out there in the psychological fields. Like I said in the beginning, don't be shocked when you start to explore these avenues of research and realize how little you actually know about these topics. So I thought I'd outline a couple of tips that I've developed from my experiences doing literature reviews and how they've kind of helped me along the way. So my first tip would be that a literature review is not a step that you need to complete in order to continue your research. It in fact is a constant process throughout your research. When you've technically finished your literature review, it doesn't mean that you've finished your literature review. Keep reading and keep exploring. You won't believe how many times I'll be halfway through my discussion section when my supervisor will send me a new paper that basically explains everything I've been trying to explain, even better than I've been trying to explain it. So you need to keep doing reviews. You need to keep reading on the topic. And that leads me to the next point. Tip two, read. Now, whenever my friends and family ask me what I've been reading, they're always shocked that I, you know, am not reading the latest best-selling novel that's out there. One of the last books I read was The Count of Monte Cristo a year or two ago. And on a side note, for anyone that's read that book, it's massive, it's huge and difficult to read. It's no wonder it puts anyone off reading. It's also my favorite book and subsequently movie. But basically, I'm no fun at any book clubs. So while I do enjoy a bestseller from time to time, I spend a lot of my time reading journal articles and papers. So my advice here is basically get used to reading and get used to searching for articles. And that's basically tip number three. Getting used to searching for articles is something that takes a bit of practice as well. It can be quite a difficult process searching for literature on a specific topic. You could probably read through hundreds of abstracts of different papers, but that's not necessarily going to tell you enough objectively when you need details on, say, testing or measures or how to operationalize your variables. So this is where having a supervisor becomes important again, because if they're affiliated with a university or some sort of research database, they'll have access to various research portals and they can help you get access to the papers that you need. But start familiarizing yourself with searching for these articles in journals. And if you haven't already noticed, Google itself has a platform called Google Scholar where you can literally type in a topic that you're looking for and it will bring up any journal articles or peer-reviewed articles that, you know, might be similar to what you're searching for. Now, I say might be searching for because this leads me to tip number four. Make sure that you have the correct terminology. You could spend 2 weeks searching for articles on flaccidity in mental health when actually you mean fallacies in mental health. So this is important. And again, a supervisor is very helpful here. You might start off looking for one thing, thinking that you're using the correct terminology, but find out later on it's described in a completely different way. So make sure that you are using the correct terminology. And the only way you're really going to find that out is either by asking a supervisor or by doing research and eventually stumbling onto the topic. Tip five basically just outlines the fact that all of this comes with practice, but the more that you read, the more that you'll orientate yourself in the literature and understand it in greater depth. For example, perhaps you are trying to research a topic of resilience in minorities over lifespan development. Now, you start looking for research on the topic and you start conducting your literature review, and the first paper you find talks about the rejection sensitivity model in minorities. And all of a sudden, you realize, oh my goodness, there's a lot of work here to be done. Basically, I need to find out more about what rejection sensitivity is so that I can understand resilience better. I also need to find out what is defined by minorities and what exactly that means. So all of a sudden you've basically opened up like three or four questions that you need to do a little bit more research on. And then you look at another paper on rejection sensitivity and that one introduces you to three new topics that you need to understand. So all of a sudden you're building this massive like pyramid of knowledge that you need to attain in order for you to answer your initial question. So research is basically like a pyramid scheme. Not really, but you know what I'm saying. Now, tip number six is not really a tip in itself, but it does answer another question. Students always ask me, how can I improve my writing? Well, the best way to do that is to read more. The more literature that you read, the more you get accustomed to reading academic writing, and inherently you should be improving your academic writing skills. You need to think of your literature review and the research that you're doing in this literature from two different perspectives. Obviously, you want to understand more about the topic that you're researching, right? But you're also learning more about the academic style of writing, especially if you're in a like undergrad or an honors level. You need to understand more about that writing style and how to produce work that is academically orientated and designed to be empirical. And for all you undergrad students that are listening to this, it's going to do wonders for your ability to reference. It's going to teach you where references should go, what they should look like, and how to do them. Keep an eye on that too, please. And that's that for the tips that I can give you in terms of where to ground your literature review. Now, I was going to go into detail about the various research designs and the theoretical approaches you can take to conducting research, but I believe all of those are very individual and maybe something that we can cover at a later date. To all the podcast listeners out there, thank you for listening to me today. I hope all of this has given you some ideas and concepts to think about. But please, don't be scared of research. It's really an adventure. Remember, learning doesn't stop when you get your degree. It's merely a key that unlocks the door to an endless library of information. Will your name be displayed on one of the shelves? I look forward to reading your contribution.